This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby 138.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, three Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Bradley come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And I am retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you tonight from our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF is a nonprofit charity that provides much-needed assistance to disabled riders who have given everything to the sport. If you're able to help, please visit the website www.pdjf.org. This evening, our guest has ridden all over the world, from his native Ireland to England to Australia. The list goes on. And now he's decided to make Kentucky his home. He's quickly making a name for himself with 200 wins from around the world. Declan Cannon, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Declan, so excited to speak with you. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you have ridden all over the world, and I can't imagine the experiences and stories you have to tell us tonight. And Declan, tell us how you got your start in racing.
Well, I guess like most Irish kids, we grew up with horses, and we start very young. I was no different. Started riding ponies when I was 7 or 8, and then I actually didn't continue riding all the way through. I stopped for a few years, and I kind of liked football a bit more. And then when I was, I suppose, 14, 15, I started riding horses again, and I picked it up pretty quick. And then when I turned 16, maybe I was 17 actually, I went to the jockey school in Kildare. It's called Race. And that's a 10-month jockey course. And, you know, you go to school there, and they look after you really well. They really turn you into a jockey, basically. And they do everything from, you know, the very basics to, you know, making sure you're polished before you ride. And it's, you know, you do TV work there, you do media work. I mean, they cover every angle. It's a fantastic course. And that's really where I start. They put you in your first job, and with a trainer that suits you, and then the trainer gives you your first chance. And that's really how it all started for me.
So you were 17, you decided to go to jockey school, and prior to that you said you were involved with football a little bit. Now you're referring to what we would call soccer over here, is that right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. I was quite fast with my feet when I was younger, so As everyone else was getting bigger and I wasn't growing, I was taking a few knocks, so I decided to find a different avenue to pursue, I guess.
They were growing bigger, you weren't, so that makes sense. And why did you decide to become a jockey? You said you rode horses, and did you go to the races frequently, and you thought, hey, that'd be something really cool to do?
Yeah, well, actually, the racing bug didn't really grab me till I remember one weekend we used to take the horses, a local trainer. I used to go out to his place at the weekend, and we used to take horses to the beach and gallop them. And I remember four of us one day galloping up the beach, and I got such an adrenaline rush from it. I knew there and then that this was for me.
Wow, galloping on the beach. That sounds like Quite the experience. And so then you decided to go to jockey school. What did your parents think about that, Declan?
Yeah, they were very supportive. I guess the aspect where they kind of put you through the finish off your school while you're there, they didn't see it coming really. But to be honest, I didn't think I'd get in because there was 100 applicants and it was a two-week course. And they can only take 30 on the course. So I begged my parents to let me go on trial, and they thought, well, maybe he's no shot at getting in. And they were quite surprised. It was a two-week course, and you have to pass fitness tests and a certain standard of riding and all things like that. And then so I got in, and then it was a 10-month course, and I think only 15 of us finished, but the 15 that finished all made it jockeys kind of thing. It's it was a tough course, and it was looking back at it, it was a real fun time. We made friendships for life on that course, but it was strict. It was very strict.
Well, and 15 who actually completed the course starting at 200. I mean, that's a big difference, you know. And any names we might be familiar with, jockeys you graduated with?
Probably Chris Hayes. He was three-times champion apprentice in Ireland, and I think he's in the top three in Ireland now, and he rides in Dubai in the winter. So I guess he was probably the only name you probably could jump off the page at.
Right. And what all did they take you through in the beginning? Did you start in the barn, working, mucking stalls, walking hots? Is that how the program started?
Yeah, from the very bottom. So the first 9 weeks you stay on site and you just learn how to groom horses, muck out stalls. It's like, you know, it was very good discipline. I mean, you had to have your boots polished before you went for breakfast in the morning. It was everyone was really, really strict, and it was a very good discipline. Looking back at it now, it gave us such a good start in this game because we made us very punctual, and there was a standard to everything. You couldn't just show up, you had to be, everything had to be a certain way, and it was good.
I am somewhat familiar with this school, Declan Race, the jockey school there in Kildare. I remember when I was a kid and I had decided I wanted to be a jockey, and I had no family connections in the industry. And at that time, there was no jockey school in the United States. So I'm like, oh, maybe I'll have to travel to Ireland to learn how to ride. But fortunately, Chris McCarron later founded the school here in the United States. But that's definitely, I know just from experience here in the States, it's a great way to start out. You start, like you said, from the very beginning, and they take you through everything. And you said they even taught you how to deal with the media. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. We used to do media training, how to talk on camera, things like this. It was such a good course. Set us up for life, really. It was every section of the course took us to another level. We did computer courses. It was just an all-around great course.
Did they teach you about finances and how to handle your money when you're riding?
No, we didn't actually go that far, if I remember correctly. I guess it's no, we didn't go that far, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
It was a fun course.
Grueling.
Fun memories.
Yeah, grueling 10 months, I'm sure it was. And they set you up with a job following completion of the course then. So who did they set you up with?
They set me up with a trainer called Kevin Prendergast on the Curra. And so you have work placement before you graduate. And you start to work full mornings, I guess, before you fully graduate. And they put everyone in a yard that will be suitable for them, kind of thing. And you get feedback from the trainer, and they'll give you a chance to ride your first race. And
wow.
I mean, it's just great the way they do it. I mean, while you're there, you don't really get a wage or anything. You might get enough to get your train fare home the weekend or something, but it was like you were fed, you got your food and your keep and anything like that, but it wasn't really... You really wanted it if you wanted to finish the course, because it wasn't easy. It wasn't just, I'm going to be a jockey now. They made you work for it.
Well, it was a great learning experience too. And how was that transition going from school to having your instructors there helping you to actually working for a trainer? How was that transition? Was it tougher than you thought, or was it pretty easy?
The working environment, it was, well, you're with older guys, and I guess you had to learn things quick, or else you got, I mean, it was very, it was a tough yard to be in, because it was one of the top yards in Ireland, and it was a lot of good horses. So, I mean, everyone was looking to jump in your spot, or I guess get closer to getting the better rides off the boss, I guess. So it was very competitive yard. It always had a lot of what we call apprentices. There was always five or six, and then there was the stable jockey. So everyone got a chance, but you had to work very hard.
And how is the morning training like over there? I know over here, as an exercise rider, you know, the grooms bring out the horses and tack up the horses, and then, you know, you might gallop 8, 9, 10 horses in the morning, depending. And how is it over there? Do you get on that many, or do you have to groom and tack up your own horse, or how does that work?
Yeah, not so much. We would only ride maybe 5, 6, but be more hands-on. We would tack up our own horses, muck out our own stalls, bandage them, oil their feet, and, you know, be walking around the yard waiting for the boss. So we would probably do more with the horses ourselves rather than have grooms have them ready for you, like over here. So it was good that, like, the boss used to always say, you have to become a horse man before you become a jockey. That was one of his sayings, which, you know, look, it was great, because you knew how to do everything a groom could do, you know. So it was, wouldn't ride as many, but we'd be on a horse for maybe 40, 45 minutes, every horse.
Wow.
So our steps would be a lot longer.
Yeah, that's good. That's so hands-on. That way, just speaking from experience, you learn as you go. If a horse feels funny, and if you're so hands-on with the horse, you know maybe what's bothering the horse. If you're the groom and you can run your hands down the horse's leg, and then you go out later that morning and you actually feel maybe what's bugging the horse, that has to be a really great learning experience.
Yeah, like I say, it would make us very good horsemen. We could see things, or it's done me, so I can, you know, even when I get on a horse now in the morning here in America, I can tell straight away, you know, the standard of horse or where it belongs. It just, my mind is so more open to things from having that grounding.
Jockey Declan Cannon joining me on Jock Talk tonight, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And Declan, you said, did you actually ride your first race for the training you were working for in the morning?
I did, yeah. I rode, I didn't ride a lot in Ireland. I only rode maybe 50 races. But, like, Ireland is super tough. It still is. And then I moved to England after Ireland, after 2 seasons in Ireland, and then I moved to England because it's got more racing in England. In Ireland, we only raced maybe once during the week and 2 or 3 days at the weekend. So it was very tough in Ireland. So a lot of jockeys would move to England for more opportunities, because they race 7 days a week in England.
Oh.
And My first ride in England won.
Wow!
So that was good, but I didn't really get I didn't get enough opportunities, I guess, in Ireland, because it was really tough.
Was that your first winner there in England?
In my first winner was in England. Yeah, on a track called Folkestone, and it's actually closed now. But yeah, I did very well in England, and I rode my bug out in England. So that was the start of it, really, for me.
Do you remember the details of that first win?
It was a sprinter going 5 furlongs. He was called He's a Rocket, I think, and I made all. Yeah, he was a little rocket.
Nice to get on one of those, yeah? Go straight to the front,
yeah,
and improve.
No, it's the day you never forget, yeah.
Oh, exactly. Now, tell me this. Here in the United States, when a jockey has their first win, the other jockeys in the room initiate that jockey, and by initiate, I mean they will go out and they'll dump water on the jockey and eggs and baking powder and all kinds of things, whatever they can get their hands on, pretty much. Do they do that in England as well?
No, I never seen that till I came to America, and I thought that was a really fun thing to do. I wish they did, actually, because I've seen it a few times and I've been part of it, and it looks really fun to do that to a guy, to welcome him to the jocks room officially, I guess. So
yeah,
I wish they did something like that, actually.
Yeah,
no, we don't. You might just get a shake your hands or a pat on the back. That as far as you can go.
Yeah, they definitely make it memorable here. That's for sure. And
yeah,
you said you rode your bug out in England. And how does that work over there? Do you get a year with the bug, or is it so many races? How does that work?
No, in England and Ireland, it's I know in America they want, like, if you ride your bug out fast, I guess it's a good thing. But in England and Ireland, it's all about gaining experience, and they drag it out over a couple of years, 2-3 years, you know. It's all about learning more as you go along. And in the wintertime, we wouldn't, you know, you weren't really encouraged to ride. It was all about protecting our claim. So that's where I got the opportunities to go work abroad. And so when you ride 25 winners in England or Ireland, your claim goes down to 5, and then it's 75 to get down to 3, etc., till you've ridden 95 winners.
Oh, wow. Was it...
It's always good to not go through your claim fast over there.
Well, and that's smart, because like you said, it's the goal is really to gain experience, and so to rush through your bug, well, that doesn't really serve that much of a purpose, really. And now, as far as the weights go, was it hard for you to keep your weight down with the bug lasting so long?
It was my first year, because you're claiming 7 pounds. But after that, it got easier. I'm very light anyway. I only wake up 112, so I never really had a weight problem as such. So I've been blessed that way.
Absolutely. And what would you do? Maybe during the off season, like you mentioned, what would you do to stay fit? Would you run? Would you lift weights? What would you do?
Well, it was so cold in Ireland, England wouldn't really make a difference running. But we would just join gyms, etc. So I mean, it was long winters there. But then I started going abroad, so that made my winters go faster.
And by going abroad, where did you go?
I went to Australia my first time, and then my next 2 winters I went to America.
Wow! And how was Australia?
Australia was different. It was my first experience at working horses to the clock, and it was fun. But the horses over there seemed very, very strong at first, even compared to American horses. And they're all turf as well, but they have a lot of sprinters, and they have some fabulous turf courses. But I did find the horses very strong over there, and you wouldn't get a pony at all either, which you know, they were on the muscle the whole time for a full turn, and we'd ride a lot of horses in the morning, and exercise would start earlier. It would start 4:30.
Wow. Yeah, that's too early for me, Declan. That's
extremely hot over there.
Really? Really? How hot would it get during the off season there?
like in the mornings it would be way up on the 90s before 9 a.m. like, so.
And do they race? Do they race 7 days a week like they would in England?
They'd race from Wednesday onwards. I think Monday, Tuesdays were dark days.
And how often would you, like, how many races would they have and how many races would you ride throughout the day?
So in Australia, they had barrier trials where you put the owner's colours on and you, it was like riding a piece of work, but it was all clocked, but you put the owner's colours on and you jump from the gate and it'd be like 8 or 10. So it was like a mock race kind of thing, and we would do that, 3-4 days a week kind of thing, and that's what I did mainly. So that was a good experience, just to ride their horses in that, because it was really like riding a race as such.
And would you have to go out, like here in the States, you have an agent and you go out in the mornings and you hustle and you work horses in the morning for various trainers and owners to secure those rides in the afternoon. Was it similar in Australia? Did you go out and hustle?
I didn't ride officially in Australia. I rode the barrier trials, so I've never had an agent. But no, it was a different system. You wouldn't see the agents on the track at all, ever. Everything was done by phone.
Okay.
And a lot of the stables had stable jockeys kind of thing, not whereas you would ride for everybody. Like an American.
Sure, sure. And how about the riders that you would come across there in the room and riding alongside in the barrier trials? How were the riders? Did they come from all around, or was it similar riding style to England?
It was a similar riding style to England, and the jockeys were bigger. And actually, they don't have valets in Australia. You'd have to do your own valet. It's a sound. Kind of different.
Wow.
They just had to have their own girths, prepare their saddles. It was, found that kind of odd, really, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, I thought really it would be a country that would have their own valets, etc. But they got really strict rules on saunas over there as well. Like, you're only allowed in the sauna for 15 minutes at a time.
Oh my gosh. that would have been bad for me. I stayed in there longer than that. Oh my gosh, was that just for health reasons?
I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Wow.
But it was a good experience. Yeah, it was. A lot of the jockeys in Australia would go to Hong Kong and Singapore and places like that in their off season.
And you mentioned earlier,
very good riders.
You mentioned earlier, Declan, working to the clock in Australia. What exactly do you mean by that?
So, like, in America, we're used to going a half mile or 5/8. Over there, they'd ask you to work 6 furlongs, let's say, and they'd say, I want 15s, and then I want you to pick it up to 14s, and then pick it up to 13s, and finish in 12. So it was a little bit different of a clocking system, I guess. It was just always, it wasn't just go out there and go a nice half in 48. It was always pick it up, finish strong. And I found them a lot stricter on the clock as well than America.
And did they do that in England at all?
No, we never did that in England.
Really?
No.
So you had to develop a clock in your head when you moved to Australia, and that... How difficult was that?
Yeah, it was difficult. It took me about 2 weeks to get the hang of it once I got to know the horses. But it was just the whole thing of they have beepers on their helmet, and they used to count the beeps.
Yeah.
And I never used one because I wanted to learn it for myself, not to depend on a beeper. But, it was difficult to pick it up a second or so every furlong or whatever. It was a bit different.
Yeah, I can relate, Declan. I know when I was first learning to ride, a friend of mine had a watch that made a noise as well. And because, like you said, here in the States, it's not quite so precise as in Australia, but here in the States, you know, they'll tell you to work a half and 50 or whatever it might be. And my friend would, again, rely on the beeps, like you said, but I felt like that took away from the whole experience. Like, you needed to learn how that felt versus relying on the clock. And that definitely makes sense, what you just said.
Exactly.
Definitely makes sense. And so how long did you stay in Australia for?
I stayed for about 4.5 months, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's a really laid-back culture, and they like to party a lot, I guess. They don't take anything too seriously.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Did you go back to England afterwards then?
So I went back to England, and my first ride back was a winner, and I just went straight back into my claim, I guess.
Sure. And did you stayed in England for how long after that?
I stayed in England till end of 2012, 13, I think. The last couple of years I've been in Qatar in the Middle East.
Wow.
I was retained to Sheikh Mohammed bin Khalifa Al Thani. Bit of a mouthful, but in other words, he's the royal family of Qatar.
What? How did you get that opportunity?
I went out there with another jockey, and he had such a big stable, he needed two jockeys. And it was a great, great time. I really enjoyed it out there. The Sheikh is actually retained Frankie Dettori. So I was riding for the same family as Frankie Dettori does.
Wow, that's incredible. That's an incredible opportunity. And what did you learn during your time there? How was the riding style? Was that different? The course?
It was a right-handed sand track, and then there was a turf course on the outer. But all the horses were bought from Ireland and England, so you were riding European horses. And it was fine. I mean, there was jockeys from very international jockey colony. There was a lot of French riders there, a lot of riders from just different parts of the world, which was fun to ride with, because they all had their different styles, and you had to be aware of, I mean, whenever the French jockeys would make the running in the race, they would slow the race up so much, and you had to be aware of who was making the run and what race, and it was very, very tactical, I'd say, more than anything, the racing style. So it was a lot of fun.
Well, Declan, we will continue our visit after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much. is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Less than 5/16 to go, and Gifted Justice tries to shake clear of Ron. Ron's in pursuit. Wing and Wheel races in third. Katie drops back and forth as they turn into the home stretch, and it's Gifted Justice set down for the drive, but Ron looming large on the outside second. Third place to Wing and Wheel. A final furlong to go. Gifted Justice shake it up on the front end. Ron trying to go on by on the outside. It's Gifted Justice and Ron, and Gifted Justice passes the test. Gifted Justice in the Hillsdale Stakes. Ron was second best. Wing and Wheel was third. And many lengths back to Sung in fourth.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigal, and I'm joined tonight by jockey Declan Cannon. And Declan, that was the recent, very recent victory aboard Gifted Justice on September 14th at Indiana Grand in the Hillsdale Stakes. And Declan, we'll get to talk. I would love to hear about more about this race, given that that was your first stakes victory here in the United States. But first, let's go back to where we left off, and we were talking about your time spent in Qatar, and that had to be just an incredible experience, riding with a group of riders from all over, and that had to be a very good learning experience. And what did you pick up from the other riding styles while there?
Yeah, there was, like I said, it was jockeys from Germany, France, Italy, and different styles. I mean, they raced extremely tight there, and you couldn't give an inch ever. I find in America the jockeys give a lot of room in races. It's very fair, I guess you'd say. But when I was riding over there, I mean, you would be rubbing irons with them guys, you know, down the back into the turn. You couldn't give an inch. You couldn't be three wide. It was very, very tactical, like I say. But it made me a lot sharper rider, I guess, and all about saving ground and being very, very, very tactically aware of where everyone is around you.
How about your living situation while there? I know we've had various jockeys on the show who rode in the Middle East and in various other locations internationally, and sometimes they are very strict as far as where you live, and they kind of lock you down so much time before a race. That way, you know, they know you're not giving out any tips or anything like that. How was it there?
Well, it was. I mean, they gave us a lovely apartment, and they gave us a car and a driver. We got looked after extremely well, but there's no gambling in that country, so there was no. You know, there was no such thing as being locked away or our phone taken off us or anything like that. So, you know, it was very, very safe country as well to live in. You know, people I noticed never locked their doors. It was very, wow. It was zero crime pretty much.
Wow, and your own driver?
Yeah, it was.
How was the purse structure over there, and how did that work if there was no gambling?
Yeah, so the owners took great pride in winning races over there. So the last three races on every card would be cup races, and it'd be the races would be worth about somewhere between $80,000, and a cup race would be $100,000, equivalent to $100,000 US. And so, you know, really all the owner got was his prize money and a big silver trophy or a gold cup, you know. They took huge enjoyment in winning the cup races over there. And the prize money was huge, and I think it's getting bigger every year. I think it's a country where it's got extreme wealth to it, and I think it's only going to go more forward as the years. It was still in the early stages when I was there, but they're buying more and more horses and putting a lot more money into it.
That's fantastic. And how about Your morning work there, did you work a lot of horses in the morning?
Not so much. Maybe you go in and ride two or three at the most. And they had a lot of staff. You know, we might only go to work 4 days a week or sometimes five at the most.
And was it similar?
We really well looked after. I mean, you know, they used to pay for our flights out and our flights home, and they were very good to us.
Wow, that's great. And was it similar to Australia and in the United States, where you had to work those horses, even though you didn't work horses often, but did you have to work 2 o'clock?
No, there was no such thing as working at the clock. It was just, because it was so hot out there, what they used to do was just get them to a level of fitness, and you know, they would run often. You know, we'd race twice a week at night time, and it was just a matter of getting them fit and then keeping them ticking over and happy, I guess. So yeah, the horses were never worked very hard over there.
And how about you? You said Australia, they were big partiers, and it was kind of a relaxed environment. What would you do for fun in Qatar?
There wasn't much to do. We would go to different hotels for dinner, I guess, and you know, to play golf in that country as well. It was over $120 a round of golf. I mean, it was very expensive to do any of those kind of things. So we would just go to different restaurants, and you know, it was very hard to pass in time with it. You know, we would sleep a lot, really, because it was just the days felt very, very long.
Well, catching up on your sleep is not a bad thing, Declan, especially in this industry where I'm sure here in the States you got to get up early and you're traveling all over the place. So I'm sure that was a nice little break, getting to sleep in a lot. But
yeah, it wasn't the norm anyway.
Right, exactly. And so where did you go from Qatar?
Then prior to Qatar, I was coming out to Eddie Keneally in America. He brought me to America originally. So I would come out to Eddie at Palm Meadows, and I would work horses for him. And that's when I realized that America was where I wanted to be permanently.
How did you get in with Eddie Keneally?
Eddie, I just rang him up and asked him, could I come out? I mean, he's very well known at home for taking on good riders from home that go back and ride, and he kind of teaches them the American way of doing things, and it made us better riders when we went home. And I guess everyone kind of knew of Eddie, and you know, I just rang him up and said, could I come out for a few months? And he'd just tell you, yeah, come on out. And we built a good relationship, and I came back a couple of winters too, and then I told him I'm moving here for good. So,
what was your first initial reaction to the United States and the way things work here in the industry here in the States?
I loved it. I mean, I found it very very easy. You know, just get on your horses in the morning, and from what I was used to, like, I thought this was a holiday camp. Your horses are tacked up for you, and you hand them over, and they're walked. And I mean, I go to work now in the mornings, and I walk 6-7 horses, and it never feels like work to me. So you know, I really love my job, and I actually enjoy working horses a lot. And you know, it's to me, it's very important to know my horses. So every horse I ride, I like to sit on it or know something about it.
Well, of course, and that definitely makes sense. That way you at least have some knowledge, not only just watching replays and looking at the form and things like that, but having sat on the horse prior to riding that horse in a race has to be a huge advantage, because you know the little quirks and details, and the trainer can only tell you so much. So that definitely makes sense, and you're obviously not afraid to work, and like you said, it's not even work to you. And Eddie Keneally, was he supportive of your decision to come here to the States permanently?
Yeah, he was very supportive. He gave me my first winner, and he got me my visa, and you know, he couldn't ask for He's a great boss to me. You know, gives me great advice anytime I ring him about certain things. Or, you know, when I first came over, you know, I remember telling me I needed to be more aggressive and little things like that. I mean, you know, it made a huge difference. I mean, sometimes we were, I guess, back home in Europe, we're very patient in races, and over here, you know, you got to be on the button all the time, I guess.
Sure, sure, more aggressive. What else did he teach you as far as the riding style here versus internationally?
And my style was just had to make myself smaller and lower, I guess. That picked that up pretty easy. It's, you know, I felt I adopted pretty quick to the style as such. It was just tightening a few other little screws, I guess.
Sure, sure. And do you work on the Equisizer? I know I've put in hours on the Equisizer here before, and I would feel like that would help, you know, definitely adjust to the style as well. Did you do that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, a lot of the jocks rooms have them in the jocks room, and I do get on them a lot. I mean, at home we I guess in American style it's more of a shoulder pump action. Than at home, they'd use their legs a bit. So I've had to change my style to being a bit quieter in the saddle and just more of a pump action from the shoulder, upper body strength, I guess. So that's what I still work on because it's probably my first year here and there's still plenty to work on.
And I could, to me, watching riders in England and Ireland, to me, that looks more difficult versus the American style of riding, which I guess, you know, I'm biased given that's all I've ever done. But that seems just, I guess, easier, like less energy you put out there. So the English and Irish style of riding, you move so much more, and that it looks more tiring to me. It looks like, you know, it, like you're using so much energy. So I can see how maybe, you know, going to the American style from that, you know, maybe it would be easier. I'm not sure, but
yeah, like my fitness is on a much higher level over here. I know that much. I know what you're saying about the jockeys who do. They are very busy, and I guess we ride on soft ground a lot, and it's very tiring on horses and jockeys, I guess. So, it does, you know, you've had a day at the races at home for sure.
Definitely. I can see how that would be the case. And when you came here to the States, and of course you were familiar with the area somewhat, given that you worked for Eddie Keneally in the winters in Florida, but when you came to the States to ride, where did you first, what racetrack did you first go to?
I went to Aqueduct in the winter just for a couple of months. I had maybe 10, 11 rides there, and I think I won two races. Tom Morley gave me a chance. And Tom was an assistant to Eddie. So when I was with Eddie previously, so he gave me a chance to ride, and I won a race for him, and it was great. In Aqueduct, the inner track during the winter there was an experience to say the least. I never felt cold like it. Probably somewhere I wouldn't rush back to in a hurry.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, Declan. I was actually going to say something about, wow, you were brave to go there in the wintertime, first stop here in the States. Wow, yeah, that's. I've been there a time or two, and it's freezing, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. But I enjoyed it. I mean, there's some great riders there in New York, and it was fun riding with them guys. But like I say, I didn't want to come to Kentucky during... I didn't come down to Turfway or till Spiral Day is when I first came to Kentucky, I guess, yeah. And I started my summer or my spring in Keeneland and on to Ellis. But, it was... I had to start somewhere, and I passed the winter months there, which it was extremely cold, yeah.
Did anyone take you in the room at Aqueduct and kind of show you maybe, you know, various tips or anything like that for riding in the States?
Not so much. I mean, I used to watch Rad Ortiz ride a lot. So I thought he was very strong. He gave me advice on different things on that track, and, you know, it was speed bias. And it's, but they were very helpful if I asked for any advice. Like that, they were very good.
And then how about Keeneland? How was your experience there?
Yeah, I loved Keeneland. I remember going out under the tunnel the first time to go out there. I got butterflies in my stomach. It's getting, it has that history to it and that feeling. Not many tracks like can kind of give you that that wow feeling about it. And Keeneland's a track that I'm really looking forward to riding now in the fall and hopefully winning some races there.
Oh, yeah, it's not far away here, Declan. Just a couple weeks, we'll be there. And I love Keeneland, and I always wanted to ride there, and unfortunately I never got the chance to in the afternoon. But just the crowd and the people, and they get you pumped up, and it's just an incredible experience. And then you had to have a great experience then when you went to Churchill as well. Kind of same story, so much history there to be there at the Twin Spires. I mean, that had worth, you know, of course, I'm sure, you know, you watched the Derby, and just to be there had to be an incredible experience.
Yeah, my first Derby was American Pharoah, and I was like, there's no one in the world I've seen a crowd like this. And it was a great feeling. Even when I won my first race there, it was only a small race, but I was still giving a little fist bump because I was like, this is some track, you know, to ride a winner here. It was huge for me. And I hadn't ridden a lot of races there at all, so it was great to get a win there. I've only had two winners there, but I mean, it's another grade one track. It's huge to be riding there.
Oh, you'll get many more winners there. No worries, Declan. And how was it, the differences between riding at Aqueduct and then Keeneland and then Churchill, and what were the biggest differences between riding at those three tracks?
Well, I guess the winter race in Aqueduct, there were different class of horse, I guess you could say. There were, you know, you're riding at Keeneland and that you're riding different class of horse again, nicer horses. And I think it's sort of a track you can ride Keeneland anyway. You can be patient and you can win from anywhere, which is, gives the jockey a lot more confidence, and you can give horses more confidence as well, which is a huge thing. But, you know, it's great jockeys here in Kentucky to be riding with also. Like, I mean, Robbie Alvarado, Corey Lannery, Brian Hernandez, Julian Aperu. I mean, just the list goes on. They're great jockeys here to be riding with. And it can only improve your riding with these guys.
Exactly. Great, great group. You mentioned Irad Ortiz in New York. Who do you look up here in Kentucky?
I think Corey Lannery always puts horses in great spots in races. To follow him in a race, he seems to always be in the right place. Rides a great race. And I kind of watch him, you know, he seems to always have horses in the right spot.
Jockey Declan Cannon joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Declan, how about Kentucky Downs? That had to be kind of like home for you.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to ride there. And, you know, I felt pressure on to win there. At least I got one. And I had a couple of seconds, but I mean, it's the horses really that find it difficult more so than the riders, because they change their leads early because they think they've turned and then they switch back out and they switch back in. So it's such a long way home there. It kind of throws the horses off a little.
Well,
but it's very, you know, it's just, I didn't find any problem riding the track, just let the horses do the running, I guess. And, you know, a little bit of a downhill there into the long sweep and turn. And, it's just, I guess you need a well-balanced horse to run there, and you leave the horses alone, let them do the running. I didn't find any problem at all riding there. I really enjoyed it, actually.
Would you say you prefer riding on the turf versus the dirt, given that I'm sure you have more experience on the turf?
I have no real preference as such. I do enjoy the riding on the turf, but no, the dirt doesn't really bother me. I have no preference as such. I mean, it's just another race for me.
What are the obvious differences? Describe to the audience the obvious differences when riding on the turf versus the dirt and what you have to do as a rider.
I think more so on the dirt, it's momentum. You know, if you had a check for a stride on the dirt, it could cost you. I mean, it's all about not losing momentum and just, you know, getting a nice clean run round and a clean trip. On the turf, it's a little more forgiving. You know, you can be more patient sometimes. But on the dirt, I guess, horses, it's all about momentum.
What would you say is your best quality as a jockey?
My best, sorry?
Your best quality, your best, what's your best at?
I think just putting a horse in a good spot. I evaluate a race, I think, pretty good before I go out. And I know where I want to be and I know who I want to follow. So I guess I'm pretty sharp at that. I'd say just putting horses in a good spot where they can win.
Well, as we heard during the break, Declan, you won with Gifted Justice in the Hillsdale Stakes Wednesday, September 14th at Indiana Grand. And that was, like I mentioned, your first stakes victory here in the United States. Tell us about that race.
Yeah, that two-year-old, he broke his maiden at Indiana, Gifted Justice. And he's a very precocious two-year-old. I worked him a few weeks ago and, you know, I knew he took the heels at me and I knew he had a lot left. And did the same thing when I broke from the gate. It actually looked on the replay that Ron was going to go past me at one stage, but I was waiting. I was always waiting for him to come so I could go again. My horse was like waiting in front, which is, you know, I knew I had a lot of horse left. He hadn't really given me everything, which is a good sign. I think that horse has got a bright future.
Most definitely. And what are you looking forward to next, Declan? I know you're riding at Indiana this evening, and after Indiana closes, what's next?
Well, we're going to go to ride Churchill and Keeneland, and you know, I suppose like every other jockey, I'm looking for a Breeders' Cup horse or a Derby horse, perhaps. They're hard to find, but I have to have ambitions and goals. Like every jockey, we get up in the morning, we're looking for the next good horse. So that's, you know, we're going to go to Tampa for the winter, and looking forward to that. So, we're just looking for the next fast horse, I guess.
That's right. That's what it's all about, Declan. That's what that's all about. And you mentioned Tampa, and I rode at Tampa my first full meet of riding, and loved it there. And definitely nicer weather than Aqueduct, that's for sure. And you even get a little suntan when you come back up here. That's fantastic. And where are you living now? Are you in Louisville?
Yeah, I have a little apartment in Louisville, yeah. So quite nice St. Matthew's to live there. And, you know, it's close to the track. And I think Louisville's it's a lovely little city. It's got everything. So quite happy there. But I guess when Keeneland starts, I'll be at Keeneland every morning.
Troy, what do you do for fun here in Kentucky, Declan?
I like to swim. Sunbathing really wouldn't be my thing. The Irish skin doesn't really agree with it. I go for a run now and again. I enjoy running, and even though I don't have to do it to lose weight or anything, but I like to keep my fitness on point. So that's really about it.
Do you still play soccer?
Not so much, no. I like to play squash and handball. They were my other sports as a kid, I guess.
I have no idea what those two things are, Declan, I'll be honest.
Okay, sorry, racquetball. Call it racquetball.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes more sense now. I had no idea what that was. And how about your family? Have they been here to the States to visit you?
No, but I have family in New York. But, you know, my sister visited me from Australia during the summer, actually. My sister lives in Australia, and I took her to the races, and I actually won a race at Churchill when she was over, and she got a great kick out of that. So that was fun, yeah. But no, my parents haven't been over. I don't think they're too fond of travelling, so I think I'll have to pay them a visit next summer for a short vacation if I can find a few days. So we'll see. But no, it was great. I've been away from home since I was young, so, you know, I don't really get homesick or anything like that. So.
Well, Declan, we only have right about 1 minute left here on the show. It's flown by. Do you have any other family in the industry? Just curious.
No, just me now in horse racing, yeah. I've only a small family, so, yeah.
Just you. You were the crazy one who decided to go ride horses, right?
Yeah.
Well, Declan, like I said, we are all out of time, and I can't believe how fast this hour has gone by. Just fascinating hearing all of your stories about riding all over the world. It's incredible, and we're so glad to have you here in Kentucky now, and wishing you all the best, Declan, and I'll be looking for you out there at Keeneland.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Declan, all the best. And folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You will also find a full schedule for every show on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We bring you something new almost every day of the week. Check it out, horseracingradio.net. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.